Today is Monday, May 10th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, violence in Jerusalem.
Protesters threw stones and set towers on fire as police officers on horseback used stun grenades and fired tear gas to repel them.
Also ahead, the UN's top human rights official speaks against a new bill in Uganda.
Such provisions not only violate Uganda's human rights obligations, but also risk undermining public health.
Plus, scientists are trying to predict volcanic eruptions. These stories and more are next. Our top story today, armed Israeli police clashed with Palestinian stone throwers at a Flashpoint Jerusalem holy site on Monday. It was the latest in a series of confrontations that threatened to push the contested city toward wider conflict. Medics say more than 305 Palestinians were hurt, including 228 who went to hospitals for treatment. At least 21 police officers were also hurt. Police fired tear gas and stun grenades inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is Islam's third holiest site. The unrest is linked to the planned forced removal of several Palestinian families from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem. Jewish settlers claim the land for themselves. The president of the UN Security Council has scheduled a private discussion for Monday on the rising tensions in East Jerusalem. The United Nations has called on Israel to halt the evictions. In a tweet, the Israeli Foreign Affairs Ministry accused Palestinians of using the threatened removals to incite violence. Separately, the Islamic militant group Hamas has warned of retribution if the evictions go forward. On Sunday, Israel's attorney general secured a deferment of a court hearing on the planned evictions. Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Clashes broke out between Palestinians and Israeli police in East Jerusalem on Sunday. Protesters threw stones and set towers on fire as police officers on horseback used stun grenades and fired tear gas to repel them. They're just the latest incidences of violence in the city, which has seen tensions escalate during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. One of the issues fueling the anger is the planned eviction of Palestinian families from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood by Jewish settlers. The case was put on hold on Sunday for several weeks after Israel's attorney general secured a deferment of the high court hearing scheduled for Monday. A lower court had ruled in favor of the Jewish settlers' claim to the land. Palestinian Nabil Kurd welcomed the delay to the case.
I'm very optimistic because of the court's decision, because the legal system is not able to reach a decision in this case. And the reason is because deep inside, they know that this land is Arab-Palestinian and the papers have been forged.
But one Israeli who identified himself as Yaakov said it should go ahead.
I think it's a disgrace that after 2 weeks of brutal violence against Jews in the neighborhood unprovoked, that the courts decided to reward their violence, to reward their terrorism, and to delay the ruling.
Tensions are expected to remain high over the coming days, despite growing international calls for calm. On Monday, Israel will mark Jerusalem Day, its annual celebration of the capture of East Jerusalem during the 1967 Middle East War. The status of the city is highly contested. Palestinians want East Jerusalem as the capital of a future state in the occupied West Bank and Gaza. Israel views all of the city as its capital, including the eastern part that it annexed in a move that has not won international recognition.
That was Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. The UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights is calling on Uganda to amend a bill to ban same-sex relations that it says would violate human rights standards and undermine public health. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The bill passed by the Ugandan parliament this past week, but not yet final, has been under development since 2015 and gone through several significant changes. Human rights officials say they are deeply troubled by the latest iteration, which would criminalize entire groups of people. Under the bill, they note consensual same-sex relations would be harshly punished, as would sex workers and those infected with HIV. spokesman for the UN High Commissioner, Rupert Colville, notes the bill's punishment for consensual same-sex relations has been reduced to 10 years in jail instead of life imprisonment. Nevertheless, he says the Sexual Offenses Act raises serious human rights concerns.
The fact remains that such relations are still criminalized. This in a country where stigma, discrimination, and violence against people based on their sexual orientation and gender identity is widespread and often committed with impunity, and given that victims are frequently too afraid to report any attack against them.
Colville says other alarming provisions in the Act include mandatory enforced HIV testing of defendants.
Such provisions not only violate Uganda's human rights obligations, but also risk undermining public health, leaving people afraid to come forward for essential testing and treatment, and so affecting critical HIV prevention and treatment efforts. It's also risking further fueling fueling HIV in Uganda and in sub-Saharan Africa.
UNAIDS, the joint UN program on HIV/AIDS, says it fears driving people infected with HIV underground will undo much of the progress Uganda has made in reducing the impact of the disease. Since 2010, it says AIDS-related deaths have fallen by 60%, and new HIV infections have dropped by 43%. Colville says the bill provides much-needed protection on sexual violence, which is something women's groups and gender-based violence groups have advocated for some time. However, the bill in general, he says, does not comply with international law and standards and must be amended. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And the European Union announced over the weekend it would resume long-paused trade talks with India, along with a massive coronavirus vaccine deal with Pfizer-BioNTech. The union wrapped up a wide-ranging summit in Portugal on issues ranging from poverty in Europe to vaccine sharing with developing nations and relations in Asia. For VOA, Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
EU-India trade talks have been frozen since 2013 over a raft of differences. Helping to thaw them out, some observers say, is Europe's growing concerns about the influence and trading might of another Asian nation, China. European Union Chief Charles Michel called the agreement an important new chapter in EU-India ties, saying talks will cover issues like trade, investment production, and so-called geographical indications aimed to protect products like champagne.
We are the world's two largest democracies. We are natural partners in many areas. A robust partnership based on shared values and convergent interests will benefit our citizens, the Indo-Pacific region, and the wider world.
Michel's remarks followed virtual talks between the European leaders meeting in Portugal and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Ursula von der Leyen, head of the EU's executive arm, the European Commission, said 17 member states had also provided more than $120 million in aid to India to fight its surging coronavirus cases. For the Europeans, the Portugal summit was their first face-to-face meeting in months, with COVID-19 a key topic. They gave a mixed response to U.S. President Joe Biden's proposal to waive patent rights on COVID-19 vaccines, which has been welcomed by developing countries like India. While EU leaders say they want the U.S. to present a concrete plan, Commission President von der Leyen says the bloc is willing to discuss the idea.
But again, this is something which will not bring within the next month, perhaps the next year, any vaccines. But we need vaccines now.
More immediately, von der Leyen said, major vaccine producers like the U.S. should share their vaccines with other countries. The EU says it's exported about half the vaccines it's produced. She noted the newly announced deal for Pfizer-BioNTech to supply the bloc with about 1.8 billion doses will not only meet the needs of its people, but possibly allow it to export some to developing countries. For the first time in several years, leaders also met to discuss Europe's social challenges. Claire Vicarny said the Paris-based research group Jacques Delors Institute says coronavirus has put some in sharp focus.
Before the pandemic, the stars were kind of aligned in the EU. Growth had been on the rise since 2014. Poverty had been declining since 2012, as well as unemployment. And now, obviously, all these kind of indicators have turned red.
Member states agreed to tackle poverty and inequality, but the agreement was non-binding, and critics said it lacked ambition. EU countries are also split on how much control Brussels should have over these issues. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is VOA. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said Monday he will spend his final year in office trying to bring a lasting peace on the Korean Peninsula. President Moon said this last year of his single five-year term may be, quote, the last opportunity to move from an incomplete peace toward one that is irreversible, end quote. Moon threw his support behind U.S. President Joe Biden's diplomatic approach to persuading North Korea to give up its nuclear and ballistic missile program. The South Korean leader said his goals for his upcoming summit with Biden on May 21 in Washington will be to, quote, restore dialogue between the two Koreas and the United States and North Korea, end quote. And a new opinion poll Monday showed nearly 60% of people in Japan want the Olympics canceled less than 3 months before they are set to begin. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga responded saying that he has never, quote, put the Olympics first, end quote. Japan has extended a state of emergency in Tokyo until the end of May and is struggling to contain a surge in COVID-19 cases, which raises concerns about whether the games should go on. Japan's vaccination rate is the lowest among wealthy nations. Doctors say an Iraqi journalist was in intensive care after being shot in the head early Monday. A doctor told French news agency AFP that reporter Ahmed Hassan was shot with two bullets in the head and one in the shoulder. A witness said, quote, he was targeted as he got out of his car to go home, end quote, in Dwania in the south of the country. And just 24 hours earlier in Iraq, anti-corruption activist Ihab al-Wazni was shot dead in Karbala, sending protest movement supporters onto the streets to demand an end to such bloodshed and official impunity. Wazni had led protests in the Shiite shrine city of Karbala, where pro-Tehran armed groups hold major sway.
In a minute.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is considered a top risk factor for heart disease and stroke. Hypertension is usually treated with changes in lifestyle and prescription medications. Despite such efforts, some still have problems controlling their blood pressure. New research presented before the American College of Cardiology suggests patients who take other medications, both prescribed and over-the-counter, may have trouble controlling hypertension. Among the drugs that researchers found to interfere with hypertension treatment are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, oral steroids, antipsychotic, contraceptive, and decongestant medications. The researchers say their results stress the need for patients to talk often with their doctors to review all the medications they take. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. In Australia, a senior female Air Force officer will become the country's first space commander. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Air Vice Marshal Catherine Roberts will oversee the space activities across Australia's armed forces. Experts have said the Army, Navy and Air Force have relied on space-based technologies and communication, and centralised coordination was sensible. There is growing international competition for supremacy in space. The United States has a military arm called the US Space Force, while China and Russia both set up similar units in 2015. But officials in Canberra have been keen to stress that Australia has no plans to further militarise space, nor would it seek to build technologies to attack enemy satellites. A dedicated space command brings Australia into line with Canada, France, India and Japan. Senior officers have said part of its job would be to establish if satellites used by Australia were under threat or being subjected to accidental interference or natural events. Air Vice Marshal Catherine Roberts is a trained engineer who served with the Royal Australian Air Force for 35 years. She will take up her position as Space Commander next year. In an official RAAF video, she explained how she was inspired by the Apollo 11 moon landing in July 1969.
Today, I wanted to take the opportunity to talk about role models and how important it is for each one of us to pave the way for the next generation as we head into a rapidly accelerating future. The first person I remember ever having a material impact on my ambition was Neil Armstrong. In 1969, as a three-year-old, I watched on in awe as Lieutenant Armstrong descended the ladder of the lunar lander and uttered the first words ever spoken on the moon. It was an incredible moment for humanity and millions of aspiring engineers that were probably created at that moment. I was no different.
Last year, the civilian Australian Space Agency officially opened its new headquarters in the city of Adelaide. It's responsible for developing the nation's multi-billion dollar commercial space industry. The government believes it will generate 20,000 jobs in Australia by 2030. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has previously estimated the global space economy could be worth more than $780 billion by 2040, and that Australia needed to be in a position to take advantage of the opportunities. Analysts have said that as the cost and intricacies of exploiting space have fallen, more countries and businesses are developing and launching the type of surveillance and navigation technology that could have military capabilities. To this end, experts have said there needs to be close cooperation between the civilian-run Australian Space Agency and the planned new military Space Command division that will be led by Air Vice Marshal Roberts. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Now to the U.S., where some Republican lawmakers and conservative commentators are falsely claiming that President Joe Biden's climate plan will force Americans to eat far less red meat. VOA senior White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara looks at how burgers have become the latest battlefield in the country's culture war.
The claim that President Joe Biden wants to ban meat consumption is false and has turned into viral memes. Still, conservatives, including some Republican lawmakers, continue to promote it. The Biden administration has no intention of limiting meat consumption, said Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
In the political world, games get played and issues are injected into the conversation, knowing full well that there's not a factual basis for the issue.
It started out with a false headline from a British tabloid that Biden's climate plan could limit Americans to one hamburger a month. That's a lot less than the current average of three burgers a week, according to data from the U.S. Agriculture Department. The article baselessly tied Biden's proposal to tackle climate change to a 2020 University of Michigan study that says cutting Americans' meat consumption in half would reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 1.6 billion metric tons by 2030, roughly 25% of America's yearly output. Martin Heller is one of the authors of the study.
That really is a total false connection. You know, we really didn't make any suggestions to a particular policy recommendation. And as far as I know, the Biden administration has not made any reference to our study as well.
With a false claim, meat became a symbol of personal freedom against government tyranny, turning burgers into the latest battlefield in America's culture war.
I think there's a lot of the American West and ranchers and masculinity that the right wants to associate itself with And so steak and meat has become one of those things.
With increased awareness of the role of food production in climate change, meat consumption may be political. A 2018 Gallup poll shows that 11% of liberals say they are vegetarian, compared with 2% of conservatives. But there's no danger of the country going meatless anytime soon. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, an American eats an average of 37 kilograms of beef per year. However, they are also increasingly turning to plant-based alternatives, now commonly found in restaurants and supermarkets.
It tastes just like a burger.
Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Experts say that 2021 has already been a busy year for volcanic activity, but now NASA scientists say they may be able to predict eruptions far enough in advance to save lives. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Lava flows down a side of Guatemala's Pacaya volcano. Local relief groups say for now the lava doesn't appear headed for nearby communities, but that could change if it switches direction. University of Alaska researcher Tarsilo Garona is lead author on a report studying satellite data as a means of detecting future volcanic activity.
So the key point of this research is that we can, in principle, use these signs of heat, of the release of heat that we observe at the surface of volcanoes. We can use that information to better anticipate volcanic activity.
NASA scientists studied 16 years of radiant heat with instruments on board satellites. They found in the years leading up to an eruption, the radiant surface temperature over much of a volcano would increase by about 1 degree Celsius.
One of our main goals, main tasks, is to monitor volcanoes in real time. So incorporating this new methodology, that means that we are going to provide a lot of extra information that we can use to better understand the activity of active volcanoes and to better anticipate these eruptions.
Garona says by adding new tools for detection, researchers can predict months or even years before a volcano erupts.
So we basically combine all the different methodologies to better understand what's going on in the subsurface and also to provide forecasts of the activity. It's not always, it's not in general straightforward to make those forecasts, but yes, with new methodologies and incorporating new data sets, we are getting closer to our more robust forecasting of volcanic eruptions.
21 communities surround the erupting Pacaya volcano alone. Every Wednesday in April, devotees make a pilgrimage there to pray at the lava, sprinkling holy water and seeking divine intervention in stopping the flow. Garona says with more robust data gathering, science can warn communities like this one before the next major eruption ever happens. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That was VOA's Arash Arabasadi, and that's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the...